Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America College Podcast, along with Aaron Fitt. I am John Manuel. This is kind of part three of our kind of draft megapod, but we just decided we're going to give you that. We're going to stick to the colleges primarily this week and this Monday's podcast, and then Aaron and I are going to hit you with another college and Southern California draft megapod later this week, so I'm very excited about that. I want to remind you that this Baseball America College Podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbin and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC, win every practice. Aaron Fitt, nobody won our rankings this week. We had a very difficult time and spent probably more time than we have all year deciding who the number one team in the country is. In fact, I'm very confident we spent more time deciding who number one is this week than we have in all the other rankings put together. And here we are in week 12, and it's just kind of the story of the season, Aaron, that there's no great team. And while we've only had two teams be number one, Florida and Florida State, this week the Seminoles almost fell from their perch. As we record this podcast, they're getting ready to play Clemson in a Monday doubleheader. And a 1-3 week, not usually what keeps you at number one, Aaron, but kind of no one obvious to seize the throne.
That's right, and I think talked, John, probably about five candidates for number one: Florida State, South Carolina, Florida, Kentucky, and Oregon. I think all had at least some amount of support. At least they came up in this discussion.
That's correct.
And you know, you can make a case for all of them. I mean, you look at South Carolina. For them, the biggest case is momentum. You know, they've won. They haven't lost a series now since Florida way back in March. Since then, they've really taken care of business. I mean, the thing about South Carolina is they had the toughest part of their SEC schedule really in the beginning with Kentucky and Florida, and they lost those two series. And since then, they've kind of taken care of business against the teams that aren't the elites in the SEC. And then they'll finish with another elite team next week at LSU, against LSU. So, it's impressive what they've done. I mean, they have been hot, but body of work, you know, they still have two series losses. Florida State still hasn't lost a series. You could talk about Florida. They certainly had a lot of consideration here for number one. You look again the body of work. I mean, 18-10 against the top 25 is so loud. The fact that 3-0 against Florida State, that's loud. But you know, they haven't played as well over the last 6 weeks. They're better lately, it seems like. But still, I mean, this team has lost three series. They're not in first place in their own conference. In fact, they're in fourth place, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right. I think they're in fourth place.
So I mean, you know, should a fourth place team be number one in the country? I mean, maybe they sure have an impressive resume. You can certainly make that case, but. Again, there's flaws in all of these cases. I mean, Kentucky has won series against South Carolina and LSU, lost a series to Florida. They only have two series losses. They've got a nice body of work as well, but, I mean, it's hard to separate these teams, and so we decided to stick with the team that had been number one, hadn't lost a series all year. This is the first losing week they've had. We'll give them a chance to win this series against Clemson this weekend, and then we'll reevaluate next week.
I think it's probably fair to say that we would have gone on and moved the Gamecocks to number one if they had swept those first two games against Georgia. Is that fair? I mean, I know for me, it was really hard for me to move the Gamecocks to number one, considering they lost. I know it was a long time ago, but considering they've lost head-to-heads to both Kentucky and Florida, I know they're hotter, so they are ranked ahead of those two teams right now, but putting them at one would have been a lot easier if they'd won those two games against Georgia rather than one in one weekend. That's how I felt. I think you were maybe a little bit closer to ranking the Gamecocks number one, but that 13-inning loss yesterday kind of keeps them out of the top spot for me.
Yeah, it's that close, and that was probably a little closer to. I think I lobbied for South Carolina, although I came into the meeting a little uncertain, just like everybody else. I mean, I think it was one of those weeks where we all were hoping that somebody else would have the answer and convince the rest of the group, and then that just
right.
wasn't the case. But, I mean, you know, I think you're right. I mean, it's, South Carolina had swept those two games against Georgia. You probably would have felt better about that. That would have made the difference. So that's how close it was.
In your mind, Aaron, on this hot streak that South Carolina has been on, is there one factor you would point to for why they've been the team that really has been, since those first 2 weeks, the only team in the SEC. They're the only team that hasn't lost since then. That 10-week span, they've won 10 straight weekends. What's been the key to that for South Carolina?
I think the biggest thing that you have to mention is that their newcomers have gelled, you know, and coming into the year, that was the question with South Carolina is, you know, they've got all these new faces. How are they going to adjust to this level? I mean, it isn't the same team as last year, you know. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, rank them number one based on respect and all that stuff for what they've done in the past, but, you know, Bobby Haney and Scott Wingo and, you know, Peter Mooney and all these guys that have played such a key part in this are gone. I mean, there are some guys still here who were key parts, obviously, Roth and Price and Walker in particular, Marzilli. But, you know, they needed the new guys to gel, and I think they have. Tanner English, Joey Pancake, LB Dantzler, Grayson Griner. I mean, these guys have all come up with quite their share of big hits here during the SEC play, and I think the pitching staff has gelled. You know, it's still, you know, they had the question with Colby Holmes. I think missing his start. I'm not sure what his status is right now. That's one thing to keep in mind. But, you know, Forrest Kumis, I know, had stepped into the rotation for them last week. You know, I imagine, I don't know, I haven't actually checked if he would have pitched the third game of this weekend or it would have been Holmes. But, you know, this team, they just have a lot of pitching depth. I mean, that's a real asset for them. They can move guys into a lot of different roles. They've got Jordan Montgomery as a starter. They could start Holmes or Kumis. They're both pen is deeper, I think, than it was last year, you know, because you still have Price at the back, but you've got Evan Beal, and you've got Tyler Webb, and, you know, Logan Munson, and all these guys from the right and left side, very versatile. I think that's a real asset for them.
Absolutely deeper bullpen. I can't imagine that it's better, but it's definitely deeper. Last year, with JT and Matt Price, is it Tyler or Taylor? John Taylor, was it not?
Taylor. Yep.
I always get Tyler and Taylor mixed up, but John Taylor was just so good. You know how my affectation for submarine jokers. But, you know, to me, the big thing is, and we'll see in the postseason, if there's any closer in the country I'd want to have in terms of resume, it would be Matt Price. I'm not sure which closer I'd take in the country. There are a lot of good options for that, but just does not feel, I mean, you look at a Matt Price with a 370 ERA, he's just not. I'm never going to doubt that guy in the postseason. I know that team will go to war every single time with Matt Price. I know he's better out of their bullpen, but yeah, the scouting reports we have on him are just like scouts being like, I don't know how this guy does it, you know. But they said the same thing about Michael Roth. So I still feel like South Carolina is, to me, until somebody beats them, they're the team to beat. Without a great team, without a great team out there. I know that Florida is very talented and probably more talented from a pro perspective, at least in the upperclassmen. But, you know, you mentioned it. Tanner English has gotten going offensively. Grayson Griner has really gotten going offensively. Joey Pancake, I still think, you know, balls hit to him, you'd either take Haney or Mooney the last couple of years than Pancake if you're Ray Tanner. But right now with Christian Walker at first and the way he picks the ball over there, I think I'm still confident in Joey Pancake and that infield making plays. And LB Dantzler is a nice, you know, six-hole, five-hole kind of guy to have, a big power guy who's, you know, he's hit six home runs in conference. So South Carolina, to me, because there's not a team to beat out there, an obvious team to beat, I still think South Carolina is a team to beat until somebody does it. I hate to invoke Ric Flair, but to be the man, you've got to beat the man. And the Gamecocks are still the best thing going today. That's just the way it is.
I agree, John.
I put them number two. And I think Florida's very, like you said, Florida and Kentucky, in terms of their resume at 3-4, is better. Rice's resume is strong. I think we believe in that team at 5. Really believe in their pitching. Love their bullpen. Oregon resume at 6, phenomenal. Baylor at 7. Yeah. Every team's allowed a hiccup. The difference is they got swept. So that's a little bit different kind of hiccup. But let's go right there. Let's use that as a transition, Aaron, to the Big 12, because I think we've talked about this a lot on the podcast this year. I don't want to beat that dead horse. But the Big 12, or the Conference USA, we've talked about as being a weaker league, and not a good weekend for Conference USA when you have East Carolina getting swept by Southern Miss, and that's great for Southern Miss, but it kind of hurts ECU's chances. That league's got three bubble teams now instead of one maybe. But in the Big 12, it feels like the Big 12, it was a good weekend for the Big 12. And then Oklahoma feels like they cemented themselves as a regional team. by sweeping that Baylor series. Meanwhile, Oklahoma State and Texas both played SWAC teams out of conference. What's your prognosis? Is it, are we going to say Oklahoma bubble in, or are they safe in now that they swept this series against Baylor?
No, I still think it's bubble in because, you know, their RPI is still I'm looking at it. It's number 48. Yeah, it's in the 40s. They're still in fifth place in their conference. 13-10 in the league. It's not a slam dunk. They could falter down the stretch and find themselves on the wrong side of the bubble again. But I do like their chances right now. I mean, this was a really important series for them. I mean, they, after losing the Bedlam series the week before, this was make or break. And they really, I mean, they aced it. You know, you sweep a team that was 18-0 in the league, that's it. I mean, you're in now as long as you don't, you know, fall on your face here. They've got Samford coming up at home. It's a good Samford team, but it's a series that they should win. And if they do, then, yeah, I think they're in. But Oklahoma State, you know, is still ahead of Oklahoma in the standings, but they're in the 70s in the RPI. I just don't see how that's going to – there's no way it's going to climb enough, even if they sweep Texas A&M. I don't think it's going to climb up to bubble range. Power conference teams outside the top 60, there's no chance. I mean, even if they're outside the top 50, it's a long shot. You don't see power conference teams outside the top 50 get at large bids. It's one thing if you're St. John's and it's, you know, you have a huge RPI disadvantage and you're in the 50s, you know, okay, you can give them a little bit of breathing room there, but you're in the Big 12. I mean, that's not going to be good enough.
Now, Aaron, on Oklahoma, I think you make strong points about Oklahoma State. Strange things have happened in the Big 12 recently with regard to the rankings. Not the rankings, with regard to the field of 64. I'll leave it at that. But and it's been with those Oklahoma teams. It's been with teams from the Sooner State. But real quick, correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen Okert, this is kind of a big arm, big draft guy coming up big this weekend for Oklahoma with a couple of saves. A win and a save. Seems like he's kind of become the moment of truth guy in the two really close games for excellent pitching by Oklahoma, especially considering that Baylor has been so opportunistic and so consistent in its offensive capabilities this year. Were you surprised at all that Oklahoma was able to hold them to one run those first two games? And talk a little bit about Okert.
Definitely, I was surprised. I mean, this is a very good offensive team, and Oklahoma has been up and down on the mound. But, you know, I do think they're peaking at the right time on the mound. And they've got, I think, five guys that they really trust, maybe six guys, with Jordan John, who he's really stabilized their rotation, I think, in that Friday spot. You know, he's the guy who is probably the least big arm out of this group. I mean, he's more of like a mid-80s movement guy with really good command, pitchability. I mean, he's a winner, a guy that you like to have at the top of your rotation. And then Jonathan Gray, you know, the junior college transfer, took him a while to, I think, adjust to the Division I level, but he's got a huge arm. I mean, he'll run it up there 96 or maybe 97. And he's come into his own as the number two guy. And then Dylan Overton, the lefty, is a proven commodity. Didn't pitch very well this weekend, but a solid third guy, certainly. Damian Magnifico, of course, throws a gajillion miles an hour, and he pitched 5 1/3 innings on Sunday and got the win. I mean, that was a big-time performance. And then Okert, who throws not quite a gajillion miles an hour, but he does run up there 97. We've heard reports that he's done that, and it's a serious power arm from the left side. It's good stuff. He is their moment of truth guy. You're right. And then they can back up, you know, follow those two flame-throwing guys with Jake Fisher, who's just kind of a soft-tossing, guy throwing a little 72-mile-an-hour slow curveball kind of thing. And you know, really, from what Coach Golly told me this weekend, those Baylor hitters were way out in front on Fisher after seeing Magnifico throwing, 96 to 100 for five innings. All of a sudden, you bring in this soft-tossing guy, and it really throws them off. So, those five or six guys really – give Oklahoma confidence, and their lineup, I think, has materialized. They are a solid team. I mean, I wouldn't want to necessarily see Oklahoma as a three seed in my regional, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Their pitching is dangerous, and that as a team, I know they didn't live up to expectations last year, but I can't get out of my head 2 years ago where that team was very dangerous on the road and played with a lot of confidence, and I can't get that out of my head. I think Oklahoma is very dangerous. I think, like you said, they would almost be the three seed, that I would least like to see in my regional. Baylor and Texas next weekend, Aaron. Hard to imagine the Bears, the way they've played this year, would lose two weekends in a row, but does Texas have to win that series to stay in the bubble? I mean, you're talking about power conference teams in the 50s with RPI. Well, that's the Longhorns, and it feels like as tightly bunched as that conference is, I would not want to be the fifth-place team in that conference unless I were Oklahoma, which is the last team that they just came off a sweep of Baylor. I mean, that's a nice thing to have in your back pocket if you're Oklahoma. I mean, that feels like a must-win series for the Longhorns.
It very well might be for just the reasons we talked about. The RPI for Power Conference team, you know, they're sitting at, what, number 50 right now? That's bubble. That's really bubblicious right there. And they've lost their last two series against A&M in Missouri. Now, if they finish the series with three straight series losses and RPI in the 50s, I don't know that they get in. And we'll see how it plays out. I mean, it feels so inconceivable that Texas could miss a regional. You know, it feels like, well, surely they'll find a way to get in there. Maybe they'll make some noise in the conference tournament, whatever. But, you know, it's not a slam dunk, and that's kind of weird.
It's really weird. I don't think it's happened in the 21st century that they've missed regionals.
Yeah.
I think 1999 is the last year they missed regionals. So very strange. Obviously, all these teams don't have the conference tournament to play, and a lot can change in a conference tournament. But the Baseball America College podcast,
and
John and Aaron. Go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to interject here that all of a sudden, you know, Texas is depleted, too, on the mound. I mean, you lost two big arms in your freshman class in back-to-back days this week with a season-ending injury for Parker French, and then they had to dismiss Ricky Jacquez. Two guys that they were counting on. And they moved Corey Knebel into a starting role against Texas Southern this weekend, and he, of course, handled that with aplomb because he's Corey Knebel.
That's right.
Just all of a sudden their staff is two guys less deep, that's something else to keep in mind.
That's a real shame. I did not know the Ricky Jacquez news, but obviously that's I think we knew that French had some time earlier this year with that injury. Had he not? He'd missed some time? I thought he had. Maybe I'm wrong. But Ricky Jacquez, I mean, I saw that guy at Tournament of Stars. I have not seen him in college.
Yeah.
That dude, you know me, I love little dudes with big arms, and that's Ricky Jacquez with a real breaking ball. So we'll see that guy at a junior college near you, I suppose.
Yeah. And the question with Ricky Jacquez has always been the makeup, frankly. I mean,
I hate
to say it, but I had a scout predict to me that he wasn't going to get through his first year at Texas, staying on that team, and that looks prophetic.
It really does. I mean, and the thing is, I'm just looking at Mark Rosner. Met him last year in Omaha. Love Mark Rosner. Good follow on Twitter, the Austin American Statesman, at Mark Rosner AAS. And if you're lucky enough to talk NBA basketball with Mark Rosner, do it. That guy's on it. He knows the NBA frontwards and backwards. But he lists who's left for this team. They still have – it still looks – I wouldn't say formidable, but it still looks like a regional team to me, Aaron, with Thornhill, Dylan Peters, the freshman, Knebel, and a bullpen of Dishari, who has experience and hasn't been really in high-leverage games this year, John Curtis, and then Hobie Milner kind of lurking back there. Is this the return of Hobie Milner for Texas now?
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe he moves back into the rotation, and he's an experienced guy. He started before. I think he's probably a really key piece. He needs to step up and really, live up to some of the expectations I think that he's had throughout his career. They need him now. You know, he needs to be their guy, I think.
Yeah, it feels like he's their moment of truth guy in the bullpen. If they're moving Knebel into the rotation, it feels like Colby Milner is that veteran presence there, and he's. He's done that role before, both for them. He thrived in summer ball with that role. I know Bill Pintard loves him in that role for the Santa Barbara Foresters. So it's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. It's a little bit different. I love the Foresters. A little different. As Justin Simmons once told me, when you play for Texas, you've got that X in the middle of your chest. I mean, you're the target. And even if you're in third place in the Big 12, that target is still right there with that X in Texas. Don't mess with Texas. So Baseball America podcast, John and Aaron. Aaron, not a lot of movement in the rankings from 10 to 17. I did want to touch on the Pac-12, where a lot of those teams reside. Tough weekend for the Cal Bears. Looks like they're out of the running for a postseason bid. They get swept by Arizona. Oregon, Arizona, UCLA, Stanford. That's Oregon in first place, Arizona a game back of them, UCLA two games back, Stanford 3 games back. We finally have some separation within Oregon State 4 games back. It's felt all year like that's how we've ranked those teams, Oregon, Arizona, UCLA, Stanford, in some permutation, but that's kind of how it's been lately, and that's how we have them in our rankings now, with the exception of UCLA slightly ahead of Arizona because the non-conference body of work has been so much better. It feels like that's it. Like, you know, UW, Wazoo, Cal, Southern Cal, those teams aren't going to postseason, it doesn't look like right now. Are they? Any of those teams going to postseason?
Well, last week I had Washington in because they had, they had won a couple of straight series. They hadn't gotten swept all year. They had a pretty good RPI, but then they go and get swept at home by UCLA, and now their RPI is back down to the 50s, and, you know, they're probably looking like a bubble out team. I don't think they're done yet. I think they, out of all these other teams, still have a chance, but they're at Arizona State this weekend. You know, you wouldn't expect them to win that series. And if they don't, then I think the hole's probably too big to dig out of. So, they have an opportunity going down to Tempe, but, I think at this point it's likely to forecast they will not be a regional team. So, yeah, you're looking at 5 teams out of the Pac-12 because Arizona State is ineligible. And I kind of, coming into the year, I wondered, I think I might even mention this in my preseason 64 projection, I wondered if Arizona State being ineligible would hurt the Pac-12 because, you know, they were going to be one of the top 5 or 6 teams in the league. It seemed like a pretty safe bet. And so they were going to win their share of games in the league at the expense of other teams. So, you know, that's one fewer team that you can send to regionals, really.
You did. No, I remember you talking about that. I think you talked about that in an early podcast as well. And then you have USC, which is really just falling on hard times. The 2 losses at Oregon, swept by UW. They did win that series at the end of April against Oregon State, but it feels like the Trojans would almost have to, like, do the unthinkable and sweep Arizona and UCLA to get into postseason. And I just don't think that's going to happen for a plucky Trojans team under Frank Cruz, but just to not feel like they have it in them. Aaron.
They're done.
I think they're done. Let's talk about a couple other teams that have moved up in our rankings in recent weeks. Feels like Virginia's kind of been a little stealthy here lately, so allow us the entree into the Atlantic Coast Conference. But the Cavaliers, they don't have a real big statement series, I guess, except for the Miami series. But Virginia and Clemson are the 2 teams that have been moving on up in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Let's start with Virginia. This is a program whose identity is built on pitching, and it feels like even though they don't quite have the same arms as they've had in the past, big weekend series win at home against Georgia Tech. Both teams needed it. Virginia got it. What allowed Virginia to be greater than Georgia Tech?
I think they're better. I think it's that simple. This team has really come together at the right time, and we've talked about how they were kind of a young team coming into the year. They had some questions to answer, and like some of these other teams we've talked about, like South Carolina in some ways, like Oklahoma. I mean, it's just it took some time for some of their new guys to gel, but I really like their bullpen. You know, that jumps out to me with Virginia, and we saw it this weekend after Brandon Klein struggled. You had Kyle Crockett and Nick Howard and Justin Thompson come in and really shut down the Yellow Jackets in relief, and then the same 3 guys did the same thing the next day. So, you know, they tried to bring Thompson back for a 3rd day on Sunday, and it burned them. They ended up losing that lead late. But still, I really like their bullpen. I think that's a strength for Virginia. And I think stealthy is the right word for the Cavaliers because they've kind of quietly gotten themselves right into the thick of this hosting mix. And, you know, this didn't feel like that kind of a team for the first half of the season. It didn't, you wouldn't have thought Virginia had a chance to host. But here they are. They're number 12 in the RPI. They're 16-11 in their league, 34-15 overall. They're 15-10 against the top 50. I mean, they've got a lot of things in their favor here. There's other teams that have kind of faltered. The SEC teams, Arkansas had been in the mix. They've fallen off. Ole Miss has been up and down. I would put Virginia ahead of Ole Miss in the pecking order.
Correct.
You're looking at a few spots, the last hosting spots, it probably comes down to Virginia, Texas A&M, who, has helped themselves, I think, a little bit the last couple of weeks. Maybe one of those Pac-12 teams like an Arizona or Stanford, UCF. I mean, it's still a little bit crowded in that field, but Virginia has really worked themselves into the thick of that discussion.
I agree, and got to give a the other thing. I think you nailed it with the bullpen. Justin Thompson, his older brother Jacob Thompson. I was never a big Jacob Thompson guy. I had a great senior year, but then you get the scouting reports on this guy coming into his junior year, and they were not all that hot, and he wasn't good as a junior. He had a great career at Virginia, but I wasn't kind of on him from a draft perspective. Justin Thompson's kind of the opposite. I don't think he's really ever been considered a prospect. I don't know that he is now. But what a senior year this guy's had. He's really been tremendous out of their bullpen. Like you said, he blew it yesterday, and 3 days in a row, hey, I don't blame him. Even on Saturday, he walked three guys. But Shane Halley has blazed through the sky with a 9-1 record this year. I can't believe I just made a Halley's Comet reference on him, but I did it, and I just did it again. I should make it more like he's rocked around
the
clock.
Own it, John.
He's rocked around the clock this year. How about that? Nice. Bill Halley, one of your first rock and roll songs. And then to me, you have Halley, who's a senior, Kyle Crockett, who's an experienced sophomore. I think we all remember him doing his best imitation of Danny Hulton last year when Hulton came out of the game. But those two guys are versatile relievers for them. They've got to get more out of Brandon Kline if they're going to go deep in the postseason. The other thing that's happened for them is that while Jared King has really slumped, he was their offense in the first half of the year. I think an ACC team play, teams have determined they're not going to let that guy beat them. But Derek Fisher's come on. He's been a power plant for them as a freshman. And Steven Bruno, just a good college player. 5'9"-ish, some strength, defensive versatility, but also quite good defensively once he, I think, has gotten used to third base. And the guy's hitting 365. I mean, he's had a really loud year for them offensively. Makes a lot of hard contact. And I do want also, I know they didn't win the series. I know they're not headed necessarily. Talk about, I guess Georgia Tech's really more of like a bubble out team right now, aren't they? They're in at 11-16 in the league. I know they have some nice wins against Georgia recently, but 28 RPI. But they just feel like they're bubble out to me at 11-16.
In a vacuum, I think they would be, but in a world where we have a hard time getting to 64 teams, I think they're probably still going to be in for me this week, because they do have the RPI and
I'm telling you,
it's hard. Yeah, I mean, Washington dropped out this week. We talked about it's just.
Hey, they have Miami this weekend. They have Miami this weekend. If they win that series with Miami with an RPI at 16, they're gonna. Say they win the series, say they go 2-1, and they win the Mercer game, they have a 3-1 week. They're going to be like 33-19 and 13-17 in the league with an RPI in the mid-20s, and they're going to get in, unless they bomb in the ACC tournament. I think you're right. I want to give a little shout-out to Georgia Tech to their moment of truth guy, Alex Cruz. This is a guy, here's a guy. I'm pretty sure Alex Cruz was recruited as an infielder. I know he did some pitching. I know there's not a real standout pitch. I've talked to the people in the ACC about him, and I seem to recall there's a lot of stuff in my head with the draft this time of year. I think he's a three-pitch guy with a pretty good slider and a pretty good changeup and a fastball right in that 88 to 90 range. But this guy's been their moment of truth pitcher for a long time now this season. They went to him twice this weekend. They extend him. They go to him at the end of games. They're just so outside of Buck Farmer, that team's pitching staff is pretty much just duct tape and a baling wire, and nothing has worked out the way they expected it. I would say that coming into the year, their top three arms were Buck Farmer, Luke Bard, and Matt Grimes. They haven't had Grimes for a couple months. They haven't had Bard for a month and a half. Dusty Isaacs, who was one of their other starters, has been shelled most of the year. They've had a lot of up-and-down freshmen like Cole Pitts and, Josh Hedinger. Zane Evans is one of their guys they want to use, but he's also their catcher. Their other catchers haven't really stepped forward, they've been limited in how you could deploy Zane Evans on the mound, so they needed someone to come through. I mean, they planned for it to be DeAndre Smelter, big-time recruit out of Georgia 2 years ago. He hasn't really come through on his potential yet. And so they needed somebody, and it's been Alex Cruz. And they haven't maybe had enough help for him, but if they don't make it to postseason, it's not because Alex Cruz hasn't been one of the real step-forward guys in the ACC as far as kind of coming to the forefront. Speaking of that, this weekend, North Carolina gets a sweep against Duke. NC State wins a big series at Virginia Tech. Aaron, I think we know the story with the Wolfpack, but that's a big series road win for them. The kind of the step forward guy I was going to mention was for North Carolina, Shane Taylor. I know it's Duke. Duke has not been very good, has not been very offensive this year. But, you know, Shane Taylor with 8 scoreless innings to finish off that series for the Tar Heels. Pretty big sweep for North Carolina just to – they're making hay with this part of the schedule, it feels like, Aaron. And it feels like them and NC State, are they lock regional hosts right now?
Yeah, I think so. I think certainly North Carolina is, and NC State. Yeah, I mean, they're both very safe. I mean, even if NC State gets swept at Florida State this coming weekend, they're sitting there at 18-12 in the league with a, you know, an RPI comfortably inside the top 16 still, I would think. I mean, it's I would think they're both locks to host, and North Carolina is in very good shape to be a national seed. I think the ACC, you're looking at 3 hosts with maybe 4. I mean, Virginia,
right.
You know, really, really a possibility. And it's, you know, we're talking about probably 7 or 8 regional teams. I mean, Virginia Tech and is like Georgia Tech is right on the bubble. I mean, if both those teams finish poorly, John, you know, let's say Virginia Tech goes to North Carolina this week and wins 1 out of 3, you know, then you're 12-18 in the league. I don't know. I mean, I don't know about a 12-18 team in the ACC getting in. And Georgia Tech, ditto. They're 11-16 right now. You know, they've got to win that series. I think if you're 13-17, it's a little more manageable than 12-18.
I agree. I feel like that's the borderline area. Like, you could even be 5 games if you lose a game. I think it can be 5 games under 500 in the league, like at the SEC or the ACC or the Pac-12 maybe. Probably not Pac-12 because they never give those teams a break. But in the ACC or the SEC, with the way the RPI works, I feel like it could be 4 or 5 games under. Wasn't even Oklahoma State that year, 11-16, something like that? Maybe it was
They were 9-17. 9-17.
Yeah, I shouldn't have brought that up. I should not have brought that up. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. If I think of that for one more second, my head will explode. The other team that's kind of down there, Aaron, that maybe we need to keep an eye on, for me, was UCF, and then they went and moved them up. I wanted to mention this, that we have UCF against Rice for all the marbles in Conference USA. Conference USA, Aaron, I'm just not impressed. I'm not impressed with this league. You have Southern Miss sweep the Pirates this weekend, East Carolina. Tulane is the team that has gotten hot of late. Their RPI is not exactly in great shape. First off, let's talk about the good in this league. Rice, UCF, who do you like in that this weekend? And which team, I know we have a pretty big spread among those two teams in our rankings, but they feel pretty similar to me.
Well, you know, first of all, I can't bet against the Owls in Conference USA. I just can't do it, you know, and I know this is at UCF, and UCF is very good this year. You know, I think they're a legit, a threat to win a regional and maybe, you know, get to Omaha. It could happen. But the Owls are so much better on the mound. You know, these teams are constructed differently. I still think UCF is the more dangerous offensive team. But Rice has come together on the mound. I mean, Matthew Reckling got back on track this week after a one-week hiccup. Austin Kubica has really emerged for them as they hoped he would. And that's, boy, I mean, what a testament to the coaching staff at Rice. You know, I mean, this guy was lost. This guy was lost for the first 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season. He was not him. He was just nowhere near the guy that we saw last year. And they yanked him and kind of reset him and said, hey, we're going to get this thing sorted out. And they have. And now he's back. And it's pretty impressive.
I mean, all the haters on Rice and the way they develop pitching should just, I mean, this is almost like a straw man argument, but actually it's not. We know we've seen lots of haters of Rice pitching, but man, Wayne Graham knows what he's doing, dude. He is so good. And that coach, I shouldn't just put on Coach Graham, but the whole staff, like you said, but I guess another example, they know their players and they know how to get the best out of their players. And the one thing I will say, I know we love the Rice bullpen and it's better than pretty much it's in the discussion for best bullpens in the country. I'll give UCF a little credit more than a little credit. That's a pretty good bullpen, and there's not a lot of teams that have a 1-2 punch like Joe Rogers and Roman Madrid. Roman Madrid, he's a nice little sleeper, like 7-10 round draft joker, and Here's a little 6'1" right-hander out of a Texas junior college. I bet you the guys at Rice have seen him. I bet you they know him. That could be a nice little subplot going forward in this weekend series, Aaron. But I believe Roman Madrid went to McLennan JC. And here's a guy who we've had some velos of 94-95. Nice little slide piece. I've been told there are cross-checkers going in there to see UCF games late. Not early, but late so they can catch the bullpen guys. And see, you know, I think everyone knows about DJ Hicks. He's a good college hitter with left-handed power, going to get a shot to go out this year, not a premium guy. And then you look at Sweeney at short, who could have been a premium guy, hasn't really had a season offensively. Ronnie Richardson, I think, is in that 5-8 mix in the draft, but also just a guy who has made himself into a really better college player, Aaron, as far as he takes a dose. I think he's got 26 hit-by-pitches. So he knows how to take a dose and wear it and get the first base. And then he can be a factor on the bases. He steals bases more efficiently than he has in the past, and he's more of a factor running the bases. It's a kind of a by any means necessary get-on-base guy. They're a dangerous team. So if they can, you know, they really haven't had consistent starting pitching. Who's their weekend guys now? Is Matulis one of them? Is it Lively? I mean, it feels like they're just riding the high hand when it comes to pitching, right? When it comes to starting pitching.
Yeah, it does. It seemed exactly like that. You know, I think Lively for a while had really gone through a stretch where he was very consistent on Friday nights, had been their guy. It seemed like he'd given them an anchor, and then this week he struggled, gave up 6 runs. You know, and then they have Brian Adkins, who's kind of the most experienced guy on this staff, the pitchability, you know, veteran, not a big stuff guy, but you know, he's generally a guy you can count on. But he didn't pitch well this weekend either. He gave up 5 runs, took a loss on Saturday against Marshall. But, you know, so those are kind of the key guys they're counting on. And they went to Ray Hansen. I mean, they have shuffled around that rotation a lot. You know, Hansen wasn't the answer on Sunday, so I don't know what they're going to do on the mound. But, you know, and that's the thing is, that's to me, the still the separator. It's Rice now, you know, when they're shuffling their weekend rotation around, it's, hey, let's move John Sims to Sunday. You know, a guy with filthy stuff, and he goes out there and you know, really got the job done. Pitched very well on Sunday, and it still doesn't hurt their bullpen because they've just got so many arms back there between between JT Shagwa and Tyler Duffy and Taylor Wall, and you know, on and on. It's just a great group back there. So I still think that's a separator.
Is Taylor Wall like a ninth year sophomore or something like that there? I mean, that guy's been there forever. It feels like, you know, I think Taylor Wall relieved Justin Crowder in a game in Omaha in 2002. So it's a deep cut
there. Very nice.
Deep cut there. But yeah, UCF, it's not good when the theme of your weekend rotation is every day I'm shuffling. That's pretty much what they're doing. I'm dropping some random pop culture references there. Aaron, last part of the podcast. Finally, Appalachian State gets to the rankings. I guess I gloss right over East Carolina and Tulane, but still feel that those two teams have a shot. East Carolina's RPI is high enough that if they don't fall on their face next weekend, yeah, they'll probably get in Tulane. It feels like, I mean, they're in the mid-50s. You know, they're just like Madonna. They're borderline. Every week, they're borderline.
I feel like I'm going to lose my mind, John. But, right. I mean, I'll tell you. But, I mean, seriously, I had to put Tulane in the field last week, and their case is very borderline, you know. And I thought they were done when they got swept by UCF at home back in April 20th to 22nd. I thought that was their death knell. But since then, you know, they won a series at East Carolina. They swept Southern Miss. I mean, you know, it's not – sweeping Southern Miss isn't like it usually is, because Southern Miss is always a regional team. This year they won't be unless they win the conference tournament. But still, I mean, that has helped them at least get the RPI back within striking distance. But, you know, now they've got Marshall for 3 games. That's not going to help them in the RPI. I mean, this team, I think, needs a strong showing in the conference tournament because right now it's just, again, it's a very borderline case.
Yes, and speaking of Madonna, the beautiful stranger to our top 25 rankings is App State. And the Mountaineers, I believe this is the first time they've been ranked, or did we do that earlier this year?
No, this is the first time.
36-12, like a virgin to our top 25 poll, it's App State.
God help me.
I went there. And, you know, the Mountaineers, Aaron, we kind of were a little wait and see when they went down to LSU. And I wrote that column and talked to Coach, I can't remember, Coach Pritchett, I believe is his name. I know he was used to be at Pfeiffer. He's did a great job with their pitchers. And when you talk to SoCon coaches and scouts about their team, they focus on the pitching there. And, of course, you and I know that Bob Zupsik's kid is there, Taylor Zupsik. They lost that series. Right when we were about to rank them in March, They lost that series at Elon, 2 out of 3. But it appears, Aaron, and then soon after that they lost that series at Georgia Southern. They haven't lost one since then, and this weekend they go on the road at a team that had been very hot in Samford and win that series, a senior weekend for Samford, which has got a big schedule coming up, and we like Samford's talent. But the bullpen, you know, guys like Nathan Hyatt and that offense come through for App State and win that series and beat Lex Rutledge on Sunday night. Got one of the last runs off Lex Rutledge and the submariner Vanderheiden for Samford. So App State feels like they're kind of for real. Their resume, Aaron, is quite impressive.
Yeah, it is. You know, and Chris Pollard and his staff have done
a really nice
job building this program. You're welcome. Building this program, you know, over the years, I mean, I think it is a program that has had positive momentum for a while, and you know, they've been kind of on the verge of a breakout. And this year is one of those years where it was everything kind of pointed to this season for them. You know, a lot of veterans. We've talked about this before this year about how much it matters to have upperclassmen, and you know, they've got a lot of them, and it's a very good offensive team. They do have some power.
Daniel Kusev's among your lead national leaders in home runs. That guy's been. He's kind of done it for them all year from a power standpoint.
Exactly. You know, but it's one of those teams that can beat you, you know, 1 through 9. They've got some guys with some pop that can surprise you a little bit, with the exception, I guess, of Brandon Burris, who's really a nice on-base guy, kind of a catalyst for them. But, you know, we've talked about their weekend rotation before, and Seth Grant, Ryan Arrowood, and, you know, Rob Marcello. It's a really strong trio. You know, they're just really solid, competitive guys that give you a chance to win every week, and they do have some depth in the bullpen, which they showed this weekend. And I think they're pretty good. You know, I think they're legitimately a good club, and they could be looking at a 2 seed to regional.
I mean, I would expect to see them if they're a 2 seed. If they play through, they're going to be a 2 seed. It still sounds like Elon is an at large team, maybe in that 54 RPI, or is Elon falling off the bubble, Aaron?
I think they have slid off the bubble. I really kind of held my nose and put them in last week because, again, I couldn't get to 64. But, you know, that was with the caveat that they needed to finish strong, and that included, for me, a win at East Carolina this past week, and they didn't get that done. So, to me, that was how close they were to the edge. Now I've got them off, and they're 28 and 24. They're in the 50s. You know, really the thing's been propping them up all year is they won series against App in College of Charleston and Samford, the 3 teams ahead of them in the standings. But, you know, they've also lost series to teams that they shouldn't have lost series to. You know, Wofford, you know,
right.
Western Carolina, which is a solid club, but, you know, you got to win that home series at Furman. I mean, you know, those series kind of cancel out the good series. So, and Davidson also, they lost the series to them. So
SoCon really could be a 2-bid league potentially, necessarily.
I think it probably will be.
Yeah.
It probably will be a 2-bid league unless somebody else wins a conference tournament besides App or Charleston.
Yeah, because you have Samford with Oklahoma and Florida, their last 4 games. I suppose some crazy thing could happen. They could win 2 of those 4 games or 3 of those 4 games. I'm not even going to say sweep. But their RPI is in the 63 range. And just for the rest of the team, the league has almost kind of beat itself up enough that you're looking at App State, East Carolina from the Conference USA, and College of Charleston as those likely 2 seeds there and at Raleigh, Chapel Hill, and Columbia, right?
Yeah, and Charleston, I think, is more like a 3 seed at this point. You know,
okay.
The RPI is back down to the mid-40s. But, you know, in fact, they're probably right. They're probably back on the bubble after this weekend, losing the series to UNC Asheville at home. I mean, that's a tough blow now.
And I left Coastal out of that mix, and I should not have.
Yeah, Coastal certainly is in, even if they don't win their conference tournament. You know, they've managed to hold on even after losing Josh Conway. They haven't really... you know, they haven't really had a hiccup. I mean, they've got some depth on their pitching staff, but you know, this week's just a 2-2 week against Michigan and Winthrop. Not a great week, but I'm still curious to see how Coastal, you know, finishes here. But I'll tell you, they're definitely not as imposing as if they're your 2 seed in a regional or 3 even. You know, without Josh Conway, they don't look as scary because he's their best guy.
Yeah, I think to keep it in the pop song vein, they're just trying to hold on for one more day. I can't believe I just watched that Bridesmaid movie recently. So I have had Wilson Phillips on the brain. I always thought one of the Phillips was good looking. I can't remember which one, but that's neither here nor there. It's a random podcast with John and Aaron. Let's wrap up, Aaron. Please save me from myself. This weekend, this weekend. Well, it's not even this weekend. It's still, we have to wait 2 weeks for the Big West showdown of Long Beach State and Fullerton. And you got to give it up to Rick Vanderhook. Fullerton's just been so consistent, Aaron. I know they haven't been really tested in their league. I know the rest of the Big West is kind of down, but you were just talking about these other teams. Everyone else, most every other league, has their hiccups, whether it's the Gamecocks, the Gators, the Wildcats, whoever. But, you know, even in Conference USA, I mean, UCF and Rice have had their hiccups. Not so Cal State Fullerton. They just, correct me if I'm wrong, their only serious loss of the year is at Florida, which I believe we can allow. It's been a pretty great season for Rick Vanderhook in that club.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, I'll tell you what, this guy's got to be in the mix for Coach of the Year.
I just
for me,
about to say the same thing.
To do what he's done with this team, I mean, it's a very ordinary team talent-wise, and they play their butts off, and they respond to every button he pushes. I've seen it happen time and time again this year where they'll lose a game and look bad doing it, and he'll be pissed off, and he'll read his team the riot act, and they respond. You know, he the lineup moves that he's made have worked. I mean, he came into the year, you know, he said back in the fall, well, you know, I really want to establish some consistency in the lineup. I don't want to move guys around. I just want to let them play. But he hasn't been able to do that because for various reasons, he's just had to coach, you know, with every bit of energy he's got and you know, pull every string in order to get the right recipe. And it has worked, you know, and now they do have some consistency in the week of rotation. With Dylan Floro and Kenny Matthews and Graham Wiest, three guys that they like, they're comfortable with, they're strike throwers, give them a chance to win every game. The bullpen has come on. I mean, you've got a guy at the back, Michael Lorenzen, now who's got 15, 16 saves.
You know,
he's a two-way guy. Yeah, he really is. He's a great player, and you know, he's certainly one of the most valuable players in college baseball because of the contributions he makes on both sides of the ball.
Aaron, let's wrap with this. I'm going to throw out some coaches' names for Coach of the Year candidates. You tell me if they're in the conversation or not in the conversation. I'm starting with Mike Martin. I know they're number one,
yes.
But Mike Martin, I mean, again, I think I've said this all year, probably no coach more taken for granted in college baseball than Mike Martin because they've been so consistent and because they haven't won it in Omaha yet. But for me, he's at the top of my list.
He's at the top of my list, too. Yep.
Okay. My other candidates include, but not limited to, Hookie. We just talked about him. Right?
Yes.
George Horton?
Absolutely.
To me, that's the top tier. I would say the next tier of guys after that would include some program-building guys who I think deserve some credit. I would include Rob Childress, Terry Rooney, Doug Schreiber, Chris Pollard, kind of in that discussion.
Sure. I mean, Gary Henderson you could throw in there, too. He's done a nice job with Kentucky.
The reason I left Gary out of that is just that prior to this year, they had not even been a regional team. And I would say
right.
that Doug Schreiber is kind of in that same boat, but I think it's a little bit different at Purdue than at Kentucky, where Gary Henderson was handed a program that was in pretty good shape. So for me, I wouldn't quite put him in this conversation yet, but that's just me. Is there anybody else who is in that conversation for you? I mean, I know it's early. A lot of things could change. It's not early, but a lot of things can change in the next 2-3 weeks here. But anybody else in that mix for you? Am I leaving out an obvious candidate?
I think that's it. I think you've pretty much nailed it. I think those are the guys. I mean, I think Steve Smith has done a good coaching job this year, but I don't think that I would put him quite in this category.
I agree. When you fire when you reassign a coach the day before the season starts, something like that,
yeah.
I don't like to reward that personally. What they do on the field is different, but for me, Coach of the Year, you win the Coach of the Year when you don't have turmoil like that. That's just the bottom line for me.
I have to agree. I mean, I wasn't going to necessarily say that, but I agree. I think that is the fly in the ointment of his candidacy.
We don't know what happened with him and Mitch Thompson. We don't know what happened, and you know Baylor's been very mum about it, and they've given us enough of another storyline that it's not one that you really focus on or talk about that much. But I think we have enough other candidates that you don't give it to a guy. Coach of the Year is not a guy who let go of one of his trusted assistants you know, for 18 years right before the season started. So that's how I view it.
During the season, John. It was during the season.
To me, that's very fair. I think he's not going to win that award. It's our award, and we can make our own rules, and that's why he's not going to win the award. Elliot Avent, does Elliot Avent get in there?
Yeah, sure. Throw Elliot's name in the mix, absolutely. I mean, that's again, it's the program that they really, you know, they kind of hit the lottery with that recruiting class. But you got to give them credit for getting that class to campus, and now they're really sitting pretty going forward. I mean, you got to like where that program is at right now.
I really do, and I don't think I've ever had a time where I have looked forward to going to games at NC State as much as I have this year. I haven't gone to one recently. I guess I went to one a week and a half ago. Well, I guess it was the Duke series. I don't know how long ago that was. But I'll tell you what, assistant coach of the year, that's a much a different discussion. But Chris Hart, when you're a recruiting coordinator and you bring in a freshman class like that, you get on the radar for assistant coach of the year pretty doggone quick. So that's how you want to know how you get assistant coach of the year. That's how. Be recruiting coordinator and bring Rodon, Thomas, and Rutledge, and Jernigan, and Fincher, and all those guys to campus. That's going to do it for
Turner,
me.
I think you meant.
Yeah, what did I call him, Thomas?
Thomas.
That was like a 350-pound NFL offensive lineman who was Trey Thomas. And why I mixed him up with a 170-pound greyhound whippet of a third baseman like Trey Turner is beyond me. And yet, I have done that consistently all year. Just don't get it, Aaron.
At least we solved the Rutledge Jernigan mix-up. I think you've got that one down.
I think I've got that one down. But where are you headed this weekend for the season? Well, it's not the regular season's final weekend for you. You're on the West Coast. They have two more weeks.
Well, I'm going to the ACC tournament in 2 weeks, so
this is
the last regular season weekend for me. I don't remember where I'm going to be this weekend. I know there's something going. Oh, you know, I know Arizona's in town. I'll probably see them a little bit. I would like to get to see Long Beach. Those are probably some of the stops that are on my itinerary this weekend.
And that's right. And then after that, we'll get to see you go out to Stamey's Barbecue over in Greensboro and catch some of the ACC tournament in Greensboro in 2 weeks. Very excited about that. So for Aaron Fitt, I am John Manuel reminding you that the Baseball America College Podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbett and more on ATECsports.com. ATEC win every practice. Aaron, I didn't even mention that Vanderbilt won a series on the road at LSU this weekend. We've got to mention that real quick before we go. Commodores are kind of going to be one of those teams that are going to help you get to 64, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, they're in a situation right now where I think if they finish above 500, they're in, and all of a sudden it's become a real possibility because they're a game above 500, so if they can win this home series against Ole Miss, take two out of three, let's say, then all you got to do is win one game in Hoover, and then I think you're in, you know, with all the games they've played against the top 25 and the top 50, you know, the RPI is in the 30s now. It's, you know, it'd be close, but I need help. I need help getting to 64, and so I think I'm going to hop on the Vanderbilt train.
I'll tell you what, I've already got the headline written for the stock report this week, Commodore 64.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the copy editor in me is very proud of myself. So that's a very small part of my body.
We will have Vanderbilt also as a note in three strikes coming up later today, along with Oklahoma with their big sweep and a little bit on Ross Stripling of Texas A&M.
Yeah, another no-hitter, Chitsy. So great stuff as always from you. Always enjoy it. Thanks for playing along with the stupid pop culture 80s pop song references.
Always a pleasure.
For Aaron, I'm John. We'll see you next time, and we'll see you later this week for a Draft Part 3 Megapod. So long, everybody.